Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days. And good days as well.
Feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York Podcast.
Maybe you're afraid. Maybe you experience fear. And maybe you don't know how to deal with that fear. Certainly, if you're like me, you might elect to spend all day Saturday watching all 8 episodes of Stranger Things on Netflix and call it a day because, you know what? It's too intolerable. But maybe there's another way. Maybe through meditation, there's another way to work with fear, to accommodate some level of fearlessness. How about that? And Natalie Baker is going to talk to us about what that actually means in this talk on fearlessness and gentleness. And this was recorded at our weekly Dharma gathering just a couple of weeks ago in mid-January. Natalie Baker, as you know, is a regular contributor to the podcast. She is a licensed psychotherapist in addition to being a meditation teacher and Shambhala teacher. And she is also teaching Shambhala Training Weekend 1. What is Shambhala Training Weekend 1? It's a weekend of meditation and talks and discussion, a real immersive meditation experience for people who are new to meditation or who've been doing it for a while and want to immerse a little bit deeper into meditation practice. This is happening the weekend of March 3rd, the first weekend of March, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Check it out. You know what? If you like this talk, Natalie Baker's a great teacher. You might have a great experience at this weekend. Go to ny.shambhala.org. Click the link on the homepage, Shambhala Training Weekend 1 with Natalie Baker. And now, Natalie Baker... Yeah, I guess we're doing it. We're going to do it.
We're going to talk about fear, which is a big part of our everyday experience. And the antidote to fear, which is bringing mindfulness and gentleness to our fearful experience, our fearful minds, and how that leads to the experience of fearlessness, which is being able to go beyond our fearful minds. The Shambhala lineage, unlike other Buddhist teachings, the Shambhala teachings actually are wisdom teachings that were invited to this particular place and time to be revealed. So in other words, they're teachings for us as Westerners who are lay people, who have lives and jobs and spouses. So the emphasis actually is much more on meditation in everyday life rather than meditating in a cave and having patrons support you. So if you ever have doubts that you don't understand these teachings or you can't practice meditation, please call to mind that these teachings were meant for you. And the core of the Shambhala teachings are that your human experience is workable. So you don't actually have to change who you are in order to become sane. That's kind of radical. So then the question becomes, okay, but how do you do that? Because it sure doesn't feel sane. Sure doesn't feel workable a lot of the time. So when you think about things that scare you, things you worry about. How do you relate with yourself? Just for a second, just pull up a topic that you're worrying about currently. And then notice how you're talking to yourself. What's the tone that you take? What's the language that you use? Most of us, when we reflect like this, discover that the tone we're using is kind of harsh, unkind. And when you think about meeting your fear, whether it's as an actual physical sensation or on the level of thought as worries, we don't usually think to communicate with ourselves with kindness, with encouragement, acceptance. It's okay. You can do this. You're not a freak. I bet you everybody else is feeling this way too. We usually think that we're alone. That's one of the ways we mess with ourselves. We think, I have this fear, I have this concern, but nobody else does. Or we'll call to mind the one person who doesn't have this problem. And then we'll say, see, what's wrong with you? So-and-so can do this, or so-and-so's happy, or look at their relationship. Right? So we'll use comparison as a nice juicy way to be mean. But it's interesting, I was thinking about, you know, this idea of meeting our fear and our doubts with some gentle inner voice. And the first thing that popped into my head was Will Ferrell playing one of his sort of goofy characters. And I think we have an assumption that that's naive to meet our fears, our worries with kindness. So I looked up the word naive in the dictionary. And it's very interesting. So Trungpa Rinpoche, who started the Shambhala lineage, or started the Shambhala teachings, I should say, in the West and brought them here, he, when he was studying English and translating texts, so the Shambhala teachings came to him in Tibetan, and then he translated them into English, and he was very particular about the words he chose. So maybe inspired by his discipline, I decided to look up the word naive. And it's French, and it means to be natural. Naive is to be natural or just born. And then a few more down, it says foolish. But I think we all go to the foolish first, right? We don't think of naive as newly born. But I think that if you could, when you think of yourself as being naive, if you could say to yourself, oh, that means I'm being fresh in this moment. My experience is arriving as a natural thing. Of course, the brain, and I'll talk more about the brain and fear and bring in that piece, but if the brain is producing a fear response, it usually thinks there's danger present. So to be newly born or natural in a situation that is being perceived as dangerous, then we are being foolish, right? Because then we're at risk for being hurt. So one of the questions we have to answer, if we're going to meet our fear with some form of gentleness, is it safe to do so? Is the environment friendly? And so therefore we can be open and kind and naive. And we won't get our arm ripped off or suddenly become homeless and destitute. But the Shambhala teachings, as I mentioned before, are very much about demonstrating to the student that your humanity, your humanness, is actually your path. So we're not bringing in something new in order to achieve some wisdom, some peace of mind, but actually through who we are as, in this case, fearful beings, we can actually progress, become saner. What do you think? If you examine your experience, which hopefully you do when you practice meditation, and I'll talk more in a minute about that, you discover that there's a lot of fear in us. In fact, as we come to understand the functioning of the brain, we appreciate that our basic ability that we share with other animals is this ability to perceive a threat and then take action to make ourselves safe again so that we will survive. And that basic form of intelligence uses the signal we call fear as the way to alert us to danger. And then we are supposed to, and this is like the functioning of our brain stem and our limbic brain, we're supposed to punch it, run from it, or play dead as the strategy to ward off immediate danger. And then we're supposed to come back to a state of being calm and open. But unfortunately, we get habituated to this. This is the stress response. So we're supposed to go into a state of fear, which is a signal from the body that it's picking up danger to our safety. We're supposed to run, get angry, go into a collapsed, frozen, play dead response. The danger is supposed to be averted, and then we come out of that fear response patterning. But unfortunately, right, we get stuck. And that's being stressed out. So our basic biology, which is a form of intelligence, being fearful, recognizing danger, resolving it, becomes habitual. And then our bodies start to do it all the time, right? And we're like afraid all the time. Worried about things. We wake up worried, right? Even when you wake up depressed, you're actually waking up afraid. Okay, the good news. The Shambhala teachings say, no problem. We're fearful. Got a lot of fear. Ah, that's actually the gateway to fearlessness, which is the ability to go beyond fear. And that fear, in its most basic form, is energy. Not a problem. Of course, we have very solid narratives that we tell ourselves about how it really is a problem. But that's not solid, actually. That's a story. And fortunately, stories can be changed. So the story that we tell ourselves of, you know, how we have to fix ourselves, how we're not good enough as we are, how that person doesn't like us because there's something really wrong with us, you know, that we're going to lose our job because our boss is a jerk, and all these things we tell ourselves, that's actually not solid either, and that we can work with that. Just like in meditation practice, where we hopefully recognize that the point is not to get rid of our thoughts. That's really not achievable. I mean, it is if you want to like spend 15 years doing a concentration practice. You can get rid of your thoughts. But that's also considered a cul-de-sac in your meditation practice. Not necessary and probably not a good use of your 15 years. So in our meditation practice, we come back, right? We recognize that we're lost in thought. We label it thinking. And then we come back to the breath. And we do that over and over and over and over again. So in the same way, we work with our fear over and over and over again. We recognize, I'm fearful. Oh, that's what's arising in my experience. And now the Shambhala teachings are saying that the way that we go from being fearful and reactive, which doesn't actually work, so the strategy of punch it, run from it, play dead that we do in various ways doesn't work. So now the Shambhala teachings say, well, okay, here's another thing you could try. See how this goes, which is that you could apply the practice of becoming aware. So this is the mindfulness aspect. Right, we all have experiences where we're like, wow, I just went on a mental rampage for 20 minutes without waking up. Right? That's like not mindfulness, being asleep. Right? And so we practice giving ourselves the instruction to come into the present. Notice what's going on in the present. It's okay. So the core foundation of the Shambhala teachings and Buddhism in general is there's nothing you're going to find when you look that is a fundamental problem. So if you look at your experience, if you look, nothing there makes it so that you can't move forward, that you have to give up on yourself or the world, for that matter. So that's the foundation of the teachings. So therefore, it makes sense to practice meditation because there's nothing there that's fundamentally a problem in your experience, in your histories. we can confess our sins, so to speak. No problem. So now we practice becoming aware. Oh, I'm fearful. I just went a total rampage in my head. Ah, I'm fearful. And you can just put a period at the end of that sentence. You don't have to even go into everything you're fearful about. Just when you notice that, you can just say, I'm fearful. That's what's going on. Because it'll just take another object. If you resolve that object, isn't that horrible, right? You like finally get over one thing and you're like, and then there's the next thing that you're worried about, right? It's kind of endless. So in some ways, it doesn't really even matter what the content of the fear is. And then what do? Well, we go, okay, well, usually I give myself a hard time in some way, harass myself. Okay, if I'm going to practice the Shambhala tradition, I'm going to like notice that too and go, no, I don't need to do that. I actually don't need to use aggression to solve the problem. And we actually all know this because we see it all the time, right? Where we see there's a problem and somebody or some bodies respond aggressively, either passive-aggressively through judgment, right, criticism, or actively aggressively by name-calling or screaming or, you know, punching, right? And we see, like, okay, it doesn't actually solve things, that strategy. So the good news is we know when we see it externally, it doesn't work. So now we just have to go, okay, now I got to apply that to this person. Right? Attacking this person, being aggressive, it's not going to work. It's not going to get me where I want to go. And this is a hard one, because most people have an idea that they've got to ride themselves. Right? They've got to use anxiety or some like comparison with other people or some meanness as a way to motivate change. Like that we couldn't be motivated by something else. So that's a, you know, that's a good thing to contemplate, right? Like you wouldn't think that it was a good strategy to motivate preschoolers by intimidating them, right? You're like, okay, that's eventually gonna turn out bad, right? Usually like being reasonable, gentle, right? Guiding them, encouraging them, right? That's how we're probably going to get like better little people. So we really do need to think of ourselves as preschoolers. Not in a mean way, like I'm retarded, so... But just really so that we can have that clarity and that certainty that aggression is not helpful, right? It's mean. It hurts people's feelings, right? And kids show it immediately, right? You say something mean to them and they're going to start crying, right? You get immediate feedback. Okay, that was really mean. But unfortunately, we don't usually give ourselves that kind of feedback, like, ouch. But that would be good. You could say that to yourself if you're being mean. Ouch. Stop it. And then usually the thought pops up of like, okay, but this is so Pollyanna. And that's where we have to say, okay, but it's okay to be naive, to be fresh, to try something different here. 20 days, I'll be kind, or 21 days, right? 3 weeks, breaks a habit. 21 days, I'll just humor Natalie, and I'll try it out and see if I could remember to have a tone that's kind. Which actually, we don't need to force. So this is where meditation practice comes in. And I wanted to, because people practice in all sorts of different traditions, which is terrific, I thought it would be helpful to just read to you what Trungpa Rinpoche says the point of meditation is in this tradition, because I think it's nice and pithy here. I'm at that point where I almost need reading glasses. Okay. Right, okay, so this is what I said before. Sometimes meditation also is connected with achieving a higher state of mind by entering a trance or absorption state of some kind. But here we are talking about a completely different concept of meditation. Unconditional meditation, without an object or idea in mind. In the Shambhala tradition, meditation is simply training our state of being so that our mind and body can be synchronized. Through the practice of meditation, we can learn to be without deception, to be fully genuine and alive. Through the practice of meditation, we begin to find that within ourselves there is no fundamental complaint about anything or anyone at all. Right? I mean, that's a pretty radical statement. We begin to find that within ourselves, in here, there is no fundamental complaint about anything or anyone at all. Try to imagine that state for a moment, where you have no fundamental complaint. What is that? Is that being a vegetable? Naive? It's pretty radical. I mean, think about how many times a day we complain. So when we let go of thought and we come back to the breath, and when we do this in a much longer period of time. So part of why in this tradition we have weekend programs and like the week tone that Georgia mentioned is because when you sit with yourself for longer periods of time and you sit through that kind of period of like irritation and wanting to get up and leave or do something finally, or we have to sit through that. And what we're able to then come to is that we can just be. And that realization, well, two things. The fact that we're doing it, despite our doubts and hesitations and irritations, so that the fact that we're actually practicing meditation. And then through the process of not giving in to our discursive, irritable, fearful, habitual selves is an expression of kindness, is an expression of gentleness. Because whenever we seek distraction, seek to change ourselves in some way, seek to improve ourselves even, we're acting out of some fear that we're not enough as we are. Not all the time, but often. It's coming out of some doubt that we have. So when we practice meditation, it is an act of gentleness because we're not acting out that fear that we have to distract ourselves. That who we are in this moment actually might be just fine. Limited, confused, annoyed. We're a lot less confused, actually, than we think we are. It's the act of avoiding our experience that makes us confused. So when we practice reminding ourselves that we can know our immediate experience, that we could sit with ourselves, we're giving ourselves access to very helpful information, which is our state of being. This principle is very much demonstrated when you hear couples talk to each other. Oh my goodness. What is, when a couple has a conflict, and you can just think about yourself in any relationship, right? When you have a conflict, how does the conversation start? Does it start with I or you? Right, the latter. Well, you, da, da, da. So the first thing we do is we leap from our experience into the other person. And then we wonder, why can't we understand each other? Well, I'm talking about the person I know less about, which is you, and you're talking about the person that you know less about, which is me, right? But that's what fear does, right? Fear makes us want to, like, leave our experience, tinker with the other person and all their problems. So this is the practice of I. I'm fearful. What if you started out a fight with somebody, right, and just said, I'm fearful. How are you? It would go differently. It would probably still be messy, but it would have a very different feeling tone, right? Right? You can feel the gentleness, right? You can feel the aggression in you, right? You're doing this. I am, right? The person feels it versus being able to say, well, I'm experiencing this. This is my experience. People get tricky, though. When I used to lead therapy groups where the instruction was that you had to talk about your own experience as it was arising in the present moment, people would get tricky, and they would say things like, well, I think you feel... No, nope, come back. There's a lot of speed, right, in fear. It makes us speedy, immediately wanting to go out there, jump to conclusions, or fix things really quickly. So gentleness in this context is slightly different. Gentleness is just turning and saying, what's going on here? Starting with your own experience and being open to that. Fear is not a problem. It's not a sign of weakness. It's not a sign of badness. So it's also translating, changing how you define fear. Fear is thought of as cowardice, weakness, bad. It's like danger present. So part of this path is recognizing that that old definition isn't helpful. Instead, we have to think about fear differently as part of our basic intelligence, but that sometimes it's off, right? Sometimes really there really is no danger. We are safe. And so we don't have to just immediately be reactive in that state of fear. We can sit with it. And if we don't sit with it, we can at least notice it, right? We could just notice, oh, there I go again, right? Talking away. Clearly I'm afraid because I'm not shutting up. I'm just talking. Okay, I guess I'm afraid. Here I am. That's what I'm doing that pattern again. Oh, I'm having a glass of wine. Yep, I'm anxious. Okay. Well, maybe you could just stop at one, not have the second, because then you get a headache. You know, so even as we're doing our habitual patterns, we could still be aware. Take away some of the criticism and just notice what's going on. There's a couple of quotes I wanted to share. I saw a preview for a new documentary that's all about this topic. I don't know much about it other than having watched the trailer. It's a project that Yo-Yo Ma underwent with another musician, I think, where they decide to go around the world and collect musicians from all different traditions to come together and see what they could create. And there was a wonderful quote that reminded, I was watching and I thought, oh yeah, there's that Shambhala view right there. So, you know, what the Shambhala teachings are presenting is not exclusively Shambhala, right? It's all over the place. And Yo-Yo Ma says, if you make a connection with another person, you can turn fear into joy. And he was saying this in the context of having brought together these very different people and not knowing, like, are we going to get along, right? Are we going to actually be able to create anything here? Are we going to be able to understand each other? And so instead of having that fear dictate and say, oh, no, then we shouldn't do this project, it's too risky, right? They continued to go forward anyway and trusted that that was okay. And that's the basic principle we're talking about here that gets cultivated, is that as we sit with our fear, right, we recognize that we don't actually have to let it dictate our choices, that we can be guided by other principles, and then we can have the experience, in this case, of joy. So in the Shambhala root text, it says that that mind of fearfulness should be put in the cradle of loving kindness. I think if we can just accomplish that in this lifetime, we've done very well. Putting our fearful minds. So just to start by accepting the fact that we have fearful minds. We do. But we don't just sort of leave them out there to fend for themselves, right? The fear just... right. We put it in a cradle of loving kindness. So the container for the fear is kindness, warmth, gentleness. If you get the Shambhala book, you can read the rest of the quote or the root text and try to figure it out. It's all in poetry. But I think this part of it's pretty straightforward. That's what we're supposed to do. Whether we do it well or we remember to do it all the time, right? That's the practice part of it, is that we continuously wake up from the dream of our fearful, aggressive strategy, and we go, oh, right, I'm not practicing that anymore. Oh, no, I'm going to give that up. And instead I'm putting it in the cradle of loving kindness. Oh my goodness, I don't even know what that is. So then you go, okay, well, how would I treat a kid? If a kid was fearful, how would I relate with that child? Then you get some idea of the direction. Oh, well, the tone is soft, and there's encouragement and acknowledgement. And then at the end of the path, we get to fearlessness, being able to go beyond fear. Which if you think about what motivates your actions, what motivates me to go to work every day? To what degree, or whatever your activities are, right? To what degree is that motivation fear? Okay. So then, if it's possible to be motivated by something else, what would it be?
Money.
What was that?
Money.
Money? Sounds like fear to me. What would I like to be motivated by? What would I like my actions to be driven by? That's a very personal question. And would be good to think about that. What inspires me? So then, we take that fearful mind, right? And we help it along, even though it's fearful. And we, over time, we practice recognizing it's okay that fear is with us. Who's seen the movie Spirited Away? I think of there's this little warrior girl. She's the heroine of the film, and her parents have turned into pigs. Darn. So she goes to the spirit world to try to figure out what's going on and how can she save her parents. And on the way, she meets this cast of characters, one of whom is the river spirit. And the river spirit is very sick and full of all sorts of horrible garbage. But she is courageous, and despite her fear, she helps the river spirit. And then the river spirit sort of becomes her sidekick. But he actually wears this mask, and he's got this, like, sour face. And he's just always there with her. And he's like, But she's, like, the leader, right? And her courage and her determination is what's leading the pack. And I always think of her, and I think of her sidekick there, as that's fear right there. Fear's along, right? We have to acknowledge fear's here. But fear doesn't get to lead anymore. We're going to find something else, actually, to be motivated by. Because being motivated by fear, it doesn't actually make us happy. Fearlessness at this point is not giving in to the fear. And I think you've all probably had experiences where you were terrified to do something, but you knew you needed to do it, it was the right thing to do, and you kind of hopefully just encouraged yourself along as opposed to forced yourself to do it anyway? That's getting at the principle of fearlessness. That we actually can change our relationship with fear and understand that bravery is not to be without fear. Bravery is to be with our fear. And to not be deterred by the fact that we're afraid. Not to see that as a problem. Which, you know, I mean, it's a very interesting time in our country to think about working with our fear. I think a lot of people are afraid right now, afraid of the future. So fear loves to create a narrative about the future that's really bad and really scary, which becomes a nice juicy feedback loop because you can't do anything about the future because the future is not present. So you don't actually have any power. So then that makes you feel more afraid, which feeds the story of the future, bad things. And it just feeds each other. So part of how we work with our fear is to come back to the present moment. And that's why our meditation practice is such a nice support, is because that's what we're doing. We're coming back over and over again. But what's actually happening in the present moment? Is there a danger in this moment? I'm definitely feeling fearful. Is there danger? What am I doing? Can I just be with this? Starting to feel fidgety and bored. Bored is an expression often of fear. Okay, can I be with my boredom? That's what's going on right here. Can I accept it? So that's the practice of gentleness. And then we do that over and over and over and over and over again. Over again, over again. Recognition, repetition, recognition, repetition. It's very monotonous. That's the path. And every once in a while there's a little like surprise. But if we don't see that as a failure, if we recognize that is the flavor. The flavor is that we recognize that we're afraid, and then we practice bringing awareness and gentleness to that fear. And then there's a whole, so the Shambhala teachings and the Shambhala training levels that Georgia mentioned, then there's a whole journey of unfolding that takes place, right? So I'm describing the very important consistent practice along the path, but also the very surface layer. There's lots, like, as it's an onion. And the more we practice this, the more the onion gets peeled. But then onions don't really smell very good, and so maybe I should use something like a layered cake. Maybe that's more inviting. We get to the ganache filling. What do you think? We can have some conversation.
So you're saying when you have fear, sometimes it's there for a reason. We should pay attention to it. And how? What if you don't even recognize anymore if your fear is valid? Like, I have a lot of anxiety with my job. Actually, I have a huge meeting with my boss tomorrow about possibly doing some cross-training, and I'm, like, very fearful, like, in my head that I'm just going to lose my job for even having this conversation. And I think it's because that's just kind of my work environment.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you... I mean, I know I should use, like, past experiences, but it's just any tips and, like, getting
right
through to that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the way we kind of create, like, a very long narrative is because we're not sure. Well, I'm feeling intense fear. Is there really a problem? Is there a big problem here and I haven't noticed it, or what am I supposed to do? which then, and because we're all somewhat doubtful, right? That's another strong quality we have that we bring with us is uncertainty. We don't know, like, am I doing the right thing? Am I being okay? Or failure. Yeah. Right. Right. So what do we do with the fear? Is it signaling something meaningful? Well, I'll put on my therapist hat for a second, and I'll just say that I think it's helpful to remember the biological definition of fear, which is that fear is meant to signal an immediate threat to your bodily safety in less than a minute. So therefore, punch it, run from it, play dead. So fear is initiating a strategy to keep your body physically alive in this moment. So if you look around and you don't see anything, right, it's going to hurt you in less than a minute, probably a different strategy would be helpful than punching it, running from it, and playing dead. So that's just a very practical answer. And so if that's true, then you can say to yourself, okay, I'm fearful, but I'm not in immediate danger. So I think it's okay to let go of that thought, right? Because what happens when we're fearful, right? Our minds get hijacked and we fixate on the problem. Right? I'm supposed to be here at this meditation program, and I can just keep thinking about this conversation tomorrow and how it's going to go, and is it okay if we happen to blah, 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 blah. Right? So fear, again, the biology of fear is if there really is a threat, then it's a very helpful thing to stare at it to see if it's getting closer. Right? But what we do in our evolved way is there's no saber-toothed tiger. So now fear needs an object. The object is the conversation tomorrow. And so it's not an external object we're focusing on and watching, right, and tracking. It's now a mental object that we're focused on and tracking. So all of that is to say that you can tell yourself it's okay to let go of that thought. And take a deep breath. Oh, and then it popped right back up again. Right? Darn, I didn't get rid of it. Huh, I guess I'm not doing it right. Right? So the other thing is to appreciate that the point is not to get rid of fear. We will never get rid of fear because it's part of our biology, our humanness. We don't have to get rid of fear. And that's what the Shambhala teachings are saying. You don't actually have to get rid of your fear. And if we have old experiences, you know, that were real dangers and they get triggered in the present moment, right? We had somebody in our life who is like our boss but actually did harm us at one point in our lives, then we're really going to get hypervigilant and we're really going to get fearful. We might even have a panic attack. And that's called a post-traumatic stress response. And so we also have to appreciate that, you know, there's also the relative skillful means of, you know, the world of mental health that helps support us in working with our fear, right? We don't just apply the antidote of the Shambhala teachings and our meditation practice, but we also use our discriminating minds and we know, like, well, what are the supports I need? Because if we're so fearful that, you know, we can't sleep and we can't meditate, you know, we need to add other supports in. Not too hot, not too cold. That's a very helpful, the Goldilocks principle. So that we can actually apply the technique, we want to make it so that we're not so fearful. And that's why, in part, you know, the Buddhist teachings talk about you know, the good circumstance. So we're in good circumstance because our lives are such that we can actually practice meditation. You know, we're not so deprived of fundamental resources that we have to spend all of our time just, you know, staying alive, collecting water and food and warding off danger, right? We actually have enough free time in our lifestyles that we can come here, we can wake up in the morning, we can spend 10 minutes practicing meditation, right? We actually have Goldilocks conditions. And so that's not always the case, right? Things can change very quickly sometimes, and then we lose the opportunity. So that's why they talk about, you know, take advantage of your circumstances and practice when you can, because that's not always the case. We don't always have these conditions present. That was a long answer to your question, but I think it's important to, especially when talking about fear, to also remember that this is not about just applying one antidote. You know, we also have, we have to work with ourselves and be intelligent about it. Is this a depressing topic? Are we going, into the freeze response here of like playing dead? Why bother? I can't do this. That mic's behind you.
Hello. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, so this is a really good talk. I just kind of found myself drifting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if that's, if I'm just naturally predisposed to that, or if I'm like listening to your voice, because your voice is very soothing. No, but it's even more than that too, because you're saying a lot of things that are like really interesting to me. But like, as you're mm-hmm. talking, I kind of feel like I'm trying to like solve my own problems. Like, I listen to what you're saying, and then like, yeah. I'm reflecting and reflecting and reflecting, and then I just get kind of lost, and it's just, I don't know that mm-hmm. what that has to do with. Is that like just fear or something like that? I don't know.
Well, that's, you know, that's for you to get curious about and study. Like, what is it when I drift off? Why do I drift off? We all drift off, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we all, like, I was here and then I was gone. And sometimes it's helpful to, like, examine that and go, huh, why did I exit? And then sometimes it's not. You know, when we're doing our meditation practice, we don't want to examine why we went off. We just want to come back, right? So at different times, we can apply a different antidote. But the basic approach here is curiosity, right? Not to be aggressive, to just be curious. Oh, what's going on here? I just totally drifted off. Where did I go? Why did I go?
Hi, thank you for speaking. I don't know if I have a comment or a question, but fear is pretty much what brought me to meditation, you know, what brought me to this room. And mm-hmm. I used to I was really confused by the concept of fearlessness, and I used to think that I was entirely fearless, but I realized that it was before I had any purpose in my life and when I was extremely guarded and didn't care.
Uh-huh.
And the more I invite love into my life and openness, the more fear the more fear arises. And sort of just a comment, not even mm-hmm. really a question.
Yeah, that's great.
But I, how do these, how are these teachings applied to, or how can one apply these teachings to physical manifestations of fear, like real anxiety and like anxiety attacks and stuff like that?
Well, I think that your first point is one to repeat, because it's an important one, which is when we open up to ourselves, we actually start to notice even more fear. Not that we were less afraid before, but we were pushing it down or ignoring it in some way. So that's a good thing. That's a basic meditation principle there, which is that, you know, stuff does come up, because when we stop resisting knowing ourselves, we're going to start to feel feelings. So then the second part is, well, what if you have panic attacks and you have strong anxiety? And, you know, I think you have to use all your resources, because going back to the Goldilocks principle, if we have a panic attack, we can't practice meditation because the anxiety is too strong. It really takes over. It's like a wave, right? It's completely over our heads, and that's all we're experiencing. So then we have to have the strategies that we use that help the wave come down so that we can take a breath again, right? And so for people, it's sleep, you know, eating a good diet, exercise, staying away from things that really freak us out, right? Just like avoid the potholes. That's helpful. And, you know, understanding what actually calms the nervous system. Because there really is a physiology to this. So what grounds us? Yeah, to really be practical as well.
Thank you for speaking. You talk a lot about how people are wrongly motivated by fear in their lives. Do you, and I'm sure this different things motivate different individuals, but in your experience, do you find that there's a certain feeling or emotion or something that people can successfully use to replace fear or to deal with fear, or how to change your motivations to be living your life motivated by something that's positive and good for you?
Well, I think you just said it, actually. You answered your own question, which is that we can think of the things that we want to be motivated by that are positive and meaningful, that we can actually do that, even despite the fact that we're fearful, and that when we look at a lot of our choices we make, not all of them, right? I mean, we can discriminate, we can look at our behavior and go, oh, okay, well, why did I do that? What was behind that choice, right? And we can understand why we do what we do. And then we can also think about, well, what else do I want to be motivated by? What's important to me? Is leading a life with loving kindness important to me? And then you get to decide. Okay, so then the habitual response, right? So let's say we say yes. Let's assume like we decide, yeah, okay, that's meaningful motivator to act from loving kindness. Then we have to figure out, well, what is a loving response? And that's not always easy. And that's why I say think of children, because it's easier when we think of like, well, what would be a loving response to give a child? Because it's hard when we're thinking about ourselves. We go like deer in the headlights. We can't think of a thing that we could say to ourselves that would be loving or kind. Okay, so but what if this was a child who was upset? What would I say to them? Okay, then I could say that to myself right now. So then it's clunky. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make, is that the first point is that you can figure out what you want to be motivated by. What's more important to me than being motivated by fear? What's more important to me? What are higher reasons to go into action in the world, right? What other reasons would make me want to get out of bed in the morning besides, oh my God, if I don't go to work, I'm not going to be able to pay my bills. Okay, but what? That's a strong motivation. I know. That's right. It absolutely is. And we do have to survive, right? So that's there. Is that the only reason I get out of bed? Is that the only reason I go to my job? Why else do I go to my job? So we can contemplate this. So you can figure out, everybody can figure out for themselves, actually, what's important to me. And then in a very clunky way, we can start to apply that. But having the attitude that we are going to still be afraid, right? We're going to be afraid. Is it okay? I know I set up the meeting with my boss. I know I think it's okay to at least talk about this, but boy, does it feel bad. And that is bravery. That is bravery in the Shambhala tradition. To be motivated and take action towards what we consider to be virtuous, right? Helpful, good things, even though we're going to be afraid at the same time. And it's a, you know, this is a principle we see in this culture. People are constantly pulling up figures, historical figures or even current figures, who for them represent somebody who was afraid but moved towards something because they had a higher motivation, had a different motivation other than just trying to quell their fear. So their fear was with them as they were marching along. So, you know, this we can think about people in our lives, and that's actually a good way to start, is to think about, well, who do I admire? Who's somebody I admire? And why do I admire them? What did they do with their lives that to me seems like meaningful? Of course, and then we're going to attack ourselves because we're not that courageous and we didn't do that, right? And then we're going to go, no, attacking, I'm not supposed to attack anymore. It's okay, I haven't done what Martin Luther King did. It's okay. Right? So you just see, like, it's repetition. We're going to attack ourselves, we're going to give ourselves a hard time, then we're going to catch it. We're going to go, no, that's not the practice we do anymore. We don't do the practice of self-attack, we do the practice of kindness. What would I say to a child? What would be kind to say to a child right now? Okay, then that's what I say to myself. And then I think about, when I'm calm, I think about what's important to me. Right? And the Shambhala teachings, they give you some ideas of things you could be motivated by that would be helpful, but you can also come up with your own. You're workable. That's the basic principle. You know how to get from here to a saner, happier life. Do you actually do know? But you have to trust that you know and not give up on yourself. That's my pep talk. So thank you all for coming. It does inspire me that all of you come out and practice. So please keep practicing if that makes sense to you.
It's starting to make more and more sense. Thank you, Natalie Baker. Thank you for listening, all of you. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Visit us at ny.shambhala.org for more information about classes and weekend retreats. Again, I remind you, Natalie Baker is teaching Shambhala Training Weekend 1, the first weekend of March, March 3rd weekend. And come see our talks live in person every Tuesday night. These talks happen in the real world at the Shambhala Meditation Center of New York every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. It's our weekly Dharma gathering. If you happen to live in a different city, there's probably a Shambhala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. But otherwise, if you're in the area, come pay us a visit. Say hi. Meet the other people. Share fearlessness together.